We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
TD Brammy, thank you so much for the super chat. What college football matchup would you like to see that hasn't happened yet? I would love to see Alabama, Oregon after the DeBoer hire, and Texas, Florida State.
Texas, Florida State. Yeah, I don't know that I've seen that one. I'd be kind of curious why you'd like to see those particular matchups. I think that'd be very interesting to see that. I thought one that I've kind of always wanted to see that I don't remember seeing in my lifetime happened already this past 2 years. That was Texas, Alabama. That would have been one I would have wanted to see. Alabama.
I think he's saying Alabama, Oregon, because DeBoer had like a big back and forth with Oregon when he was at Washington.
Yeah. So I get that one. I get that one. I was curious more about the Texas FSU one. Like why that one? I'm trying to think what would be the connection other than just Southern. You know, long time.
Maybe school's back on the rise. Yeah. I don't know.
But I'm trying to think some matchups that I would like to see. Well, I mean, I'd like to see, you know, I like the old cross country rivalry. I mean, back in the day when I was a kid, you'd see a lot more regular season Pac-12, Big Ten games.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to see more of those type of things. I'd like to see more crossovers. Like, you know what I think would be fun, Ryan? And I don't know that I off the top of my head have any of these. You can say if you do, but one thing that I would like to see is in football, kind of like what we've talked about, what we see in college basketball, you know, you get that Big 10, Big 12 showcase where that this one weekend, just, you know, you get 10 opponents from both leagues playing each other, however many teams you have. And just kind of have that weekend where like everyone's playing somebody and the ACC SEC matchup kind of thing, and then mix it up, you know, in different years or whatever. And then, you know, when it's two different TV networks, you just split it, you know, look, here's, you can negotiate it. Like we'll take, you know, this year we get Ohio State at home and we get, you know, or we get the games that are at home. And then next year you get the game, you know, or you get the games that are home, and then we'll try to mix up the schedule. I mean, there's things they could do, but I think more stuff like that. But as far as individual matchups, I don't know that there's anything that I would want to see that we haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. Like Michigan, Texas this year is one that you might think of, but if you're my age, you remember Michigan playing Texas. One of the best bowl games of the 2000s was Michigan, Texas. The year before Texas won the national championship in 04, Michigan and Texas played in the Rose Bowl, and it was a phenomenal game. Great game. That was kind of the national breaking out party for Vince Young. He'd done some really good things that year, but how he played in that game was like the springboard for what he was going to be that next season. You know, Oregon, Ohio State, we've already seen. Oregon, has Oregon and Michigan ever played each other before? I'll tell you one. Here's one that just aesthetically would be interesting. A home and home with Oregon and Penn State, just because, you know, you've got these two really unique stadiums with these really two unique home environments. And then you've got Penn State with the most basic traditional uniform in all of football against mm-hmm. the team that's got the most wild, unique, varies all the time, never wear the same uniform twice team in Oregon. That would be one I'd like to see. I don't know if they've played each other before. I feel like they have, but that would be a home and home in the regular season that I would like to see, that we will at some point in time see, because now they're in the same conference. But I can't think of a whole lot of others outside of that off the top of my head today, Ryan.
I was thinking Alabama, Michigan, if that's one that we can get on the just because they're just such different stylistically now that Kalen DeBoer is the head coach at Alabama. I think it's just stylistically going to be a very different game. I think that's kind of where I tend to gravitate towards those games as matchups of teams that are just very different, mm-hmm. right? And seeing that difference and how those differences parlay against one another. So that's one on top of my head. But
you're saying like they played this year, but they were very similar teams. They played after the – what year was it?
I want to see DeBoer Bama, though. I don't want to see him saving.
Yeah, it was it was 19 when they played also. But, yeah, they were similar styles of play in both years.
Yeah.
Harbaugh versus Saban. And to your mm-hmm. point, they're much different now, obviously. So that makes sense. I'm trying to think. I mean, I grew up watching Alabama and Notre Dame play each other in the regular season. Like that used to happen all the time. Games like that used to happen all the time. I mean, mm-hmm. so I kind of miss those days a little bit. But like Florida State, Michigan would be one that maybe Florida. Here's one that I'd like to see in the regular season: Florida State, Ohio State. That would be one. I don't know that I've ever seen Florida State and Ohio State play each other. So that'd be one that I'd like to see. You know, traditional Southern team against a traditional Northern team. Be an interesting one.
Yeah.
Be a very interesting one.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Domer Grizz, what's up, Domer? What part of the plans for the Shield, new football HQ, impress you the most? And does anything seem lacking or like it with will already be outdated by the time it opens in 2026?
No, I can't tell you that I've actually studied enough of what's going to be in it to be able to say that. But the stuff that I've heard that's going to be in it, there's no way it's going to be outdated by the time it opens in 2026. I mean, it's going to be. And here's the thing. Some of the things that they're going to do, like let's just say they're going to have, it sounds like they're going to have some sort of like VR type thing where players can kind of study things where it's like a virtual reality type thing.
That's cool. Yeah.
If the technology improves in the next 2 years, then they're just going to put the new technology in the room, but the room is still going to be there and that can be updated with new technology. That's the thing is you got to have this. And this is the thing that Marcus Freeman, we'd outgrown it space wise. And so now, like, if there's this room that's meant for this, if there's new technology, then you just put it. It's like meeting rooms. You know, Ryan, when you and I were playing college football, it's like you had to have the big projector and you had to have the VCR and, you know, and you had the clicker and all. Well, it's different now. I mean, so it's still the same meeting room. We're still watching film and we've just brought in the new technology for how we watch it. So I think the space is the key, but I mean, look, to me, the thing that impressed me the most is actually not what's in it. It's the commitment that Notre Dame is making to this. Because when this was originally being discussed, Ryan, from what I understand, the thought was that it's going to be a renovation of the Goog. Then it became an expansion on the Goog. And now it's a brand new, completely different facility that's going to be football only basically everywhere except the cafeteria part. And it's going to be a nine-figure deal. Or a nine-figure project, and from what I'm told, it's closer to 200 than 100 million. Like you think about the fact they just spent over 100 million a couple years ago on the indoor facility. You know, the Crossroads project was over $500 million, if I remember, about a $500 million. Like then they had the recruiting renovation. They've built the new basketball facilities recently. Like that's the thing is, and I talked to. I'll just say this now. I talked to a source the other day that was in the room for some of these conversations. And all I'll say is the takeaway he had was that this current group of leadership at Notre Dame understands the campus-wide value that a successful football program and successful sports programs in general brings to the institution. They understand what impact on the college it would have to have a women's basketball team that's dominant and winning championships, a men's basketball team that's competitive. But more than any other, they understand that if the football team is good and dominant, that benefits everyone. So if we're going to invest in it to be great, we understand that we're going to get that back in return. And to have that kind of leadership in place, Ryan, it was great to hear. And this wasn't just someone at a speaking engagement saying the right things. This was part of the internal dialogue about this whole thing. This was like real people in real conversations about it, talking about why they're doing this and what they need to continue to do. That's a great sign because that hasn't always been true at Notre Dame. And a lot of times they'd give lip service to it, but then didn't back it up. I mean, right now, Ryan, when you look at what they've done this offseason, paying coaches, building this, winning these battles against other teams that pay a lot more for coaches. And now this, you're like, dude, guys, Notre Dame has doubled down and say, hey, we're in this. We're putting all our chips in. We're going in because we think we can win this thing.
Notre Dame's hurting for money, though, according to some weirdos on Twitter. So, yeah.
Because they don't have a – like, I want to say, do you guys understand in the world of Notre Dame how basically the $15 million gap in TV money between Notre Dame and your league is to Notre Dame is pennies? And I've tried to explain this to them. Like, some of these Power 5 schools that are great at football have, like, $900 million endowments, barely over $1 billion endowments. Notre Dame's over $20 billion. Now, again, endowments don't pay for these things, but the point is Notre Dame's fundraising power is unmatched in college athletics, unless you're talking about the Ivy Leagues. It's unmatched, mm-hmm. and they don't do that for sports. They do that for other stuff. Notre Dame will never have a problem raising money. It's always been about the will to spend money. It used to be where boosters and the leadership at Notre Dame would kind of be in battles because the boosters want to spend the money on this, but the leadership won't let them do it. That's changing. And you've got a development office that from everything that I've been told is doing a phenomenal job with raising money for projects on campus, but also the athletic stuff. You've got a booster class that's excited about the future of the program, and they're stepping up to the plate with the money that's needed. But more importantly, if you don't have a leadership team that understands the value that a championship can bring to Notre Dame of football campus-wide, not just sports, then it's not going to matter. And I believe this leadership team does. And that's a big part of it. And people won't give him the credit for it, but Jack Swarbrick's going to deserve some credit for this as well, because he's been dragging people in Notre Dame towards this for a long time. And now you have more people in positions of authority that understand that. And they're going to benefit for it. And Ryan, I'll share some of the stuff with you later, but I'm as excited as I've ever been about the future of this program, because growing up as a kid in the Lou Holtz era, reading Tim Priester and Loose Emoji, you always kind of understood there was this fight for the soul of Notre Dame going on between the administration and Lou Holtz, and Lou lost. You know what I mean? And that's why we've kind of been going in this wilderness for the last three decades. This administration gets it. And that's a very exciting thing. And they're not just spending money to spend money. It's very targeted. We understand that this is going to bring value to the student athletes. And that's something you and I have talked about for years. This isn't just about spending money to have a cool slide. This is about making sure your student athletes have the best things for them. You and I have been adamant. I don't care about paying players. Put that money towards the kids that are here. And that's what they're doing. And I think that's got me really fired up about the direction of this program, because it can't just be football and football only. They have to have that support, and I believe they have it.
Broke Neck Boy, NCAA 25 triple option showdown against Ryan. Want all the smoke, by the way. Who would the Saints draft, and should they take Brock Bowers if there? Broke Neck Boy, I'm telling you, man, you can want all the smoke you want, but you shouldn't want that smoke, okay, sir? It's a NCAA 2025 is going to be a story, my friend. It's going to be an absolute story, and it's going to be a one of Ryan winning a lot. Okay, Broke Neck Boys. So I don't know about that one. Who should the Saints draft? I think that the two most likely ones are positions. I should say offensive tackle and best pass rusher on the board. I've mocked Jared Verse to them at 14 for Florida State. I've mocked best tackle available to them, whether that's Olufoshanu or Amarius Mims from Georgia. Those are probably the two most likely outcomes. Brock Bowers is great, right? And if Brock Bowers is there at 14 and they take him at 14, is that a bad pick? No, because Brock Bowers, I think, is a top 10 player in this class, maybe top 5 player in this class. But so if he's there at 14, you draft him, it's still a good pick. But ultimately, I don't think the Saints will do that, because they have positions of need at two very important positions. I mean, right now you do not have a trusted starting left tackle. You have a great right tackle who might be on the end of his career because of injuries, and you don't have a true pass rush threat opposite Cam Jordan. So that's where I think they go. Offensive tackle, pass rusher, outside pass rusher.
We had a super chat down here from Tyler Evans, and this is an NFL draft question, so I'll go ahead and ask this one for you, Ryan. Tyler Evans asks, Ryan, who are going to be the top five picks Thursday night?
Man, I have to project trades in this too, because I think there might be a trade or two in the top.
Well, how about let's go players? Well, no, let's have some fun with it, Ryan. If you think there's going to be trades, who do you think of the top five picks are going to be, and who do you see picking those players?
Number one, Chicago Bears are going to take Caleb Williams, quarterback from USC. Number two, I believe the Washington Commanders are going to draft Jaden Daniels, the quarterback from LSU, I believe. Number three is going to probably be Drake May, the quarterback from North Carolina, but I am not convinced that New England Patriots are going to stay at three. I'm not convinced. They're in a little bit of a long-term rebuild, so I think that they are going to try to recoup some draft capital potentially. Again, I'm not predicting a trade, but I think they could be open for business. I think it'll be Drake May, though. Either New England stays at three, or one of the Denver Broncos, Minnesota Vikings have 11, and Las Vegas Raiders at 13. One of those three will be the trade-up candidate, I believe, to get up to number three potentially. That'll be a trade-up destination. So Drake May to any of those teams. Four, I think the Cardinals will draft Marvin Harrison Jr., the wide receiver from Ohio State. Number five, will either be quarterback four or Joe Alts. And I'm not convinced necessarily that the Chargers stay at five. If the Chargers stay at five, I think more than likely they draft Joe Alt or Malik Nabers at wide receiver. But that also could be the quarterback trade-up party. So again, that's the Denver Broncos, that's the Raiders, that's the Minnesota Vikings to potentially trade up for quarterback four.
That's going to be interesting, yeah.
That'll be J.J. McCarthy if it is quarterback at five, yes.
Yeah. I'll say, why do you say things to hurt me, Ryan? I think sometimes you say these things that hurt me. You talk about the Broncos trading up, but then I remembered I'm not a Broncos fan anymore. So,
yeah.
You know, I the initial sting kind of got me, but I was like, wait a minute, I don't have to worry about that anymore. I got my dude Troy Pride online lobbying me to become a Texans fan. So, you know, I mean – you know, I'm open for business, man. I'm open for business. Mm-hmm. Ryan, I get one chance in a lifetime. This is a lifetime decision. Respect my decision. You know, I just got to get it right. I got to get it right, but I can be bought.
I would like to say this. Eric Santini, who is a great member of the chat, has said that Zach Wilson, blah, blah, blah. Zach Wilson is not going to deter the Denver Broncos from drafting a quarterback if they can. No. I guarantee it. Guarantee it, Eric. Yeah. Guarantee it, sir. Guarantee. Yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Someone's going to trade up for J.J. McCarthy, though. Just think about that in your mind. Think about that. It's probably going to cost two first-round picks, at least.
Yeah. Ryan, I'm going to read this one because I've already answered this question on Saturday after the game, so I'm going to read this one so you can answer this one. Or I kind of talked about it a little bit. But Irish Gordy Knott asks, who surprised you the most in the spring game? For me, it was Kahanu Keon D and Aeneas Williams on O. Who would your picks be, Ryan?
Kahanu Keon would be my pick on defense. Absolutely, Irish Gordy Knott. I agree with that one. Again, he was one of the two players on Saturday I had to look up because I didn't know what number he was wearing. So 43 was absolutely my biggest surprise on defense. Offensively, I don't know if I had a huge surprise. I lied. Deion Colsey doing what he did was a surprise to me. I just kind of thought Deion might be an afterthought in that game and he wouldn't get a ton of play and, you know, would just kind of be like, oh. Got two catches for 15 yards. That's cool. Whatever. Deion looked good though. So Deion on offense, Kahanu Keon on defense were probably my two picks.
Those are good ones. All right. Here's another question up here, Ryan, from Ronnie Reeves.
Ronnie says, schematically speaking, with the linebackers we have, wouldn't it be better to stay with the linebacker nickel rather than the safety nickel? Or is that what they did by putting Jaden Osbury in the nickel rotation?
Well, there's a lot that goes into this, Ronnie, in my opinion. Number one is it's also about matchups. Like I could have Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah type guy at nickel or my rover, and there's still going to be matchups where I'm going to maybe say, hey, maybe this isn't the best thing for him to be in coverage matchups all day against this guy, you know, where you might want a little bit of a bigger body. Or it may be the reverse, where I like to go kind of 50-50 between nickel and rover. But this team has a bigger tight end, and I want to put my bigger athletic, you know, linebacker on him, you know, in this game. Because, hey, look, Thomas Harper's a really good player. Tariq Bracey's a really good player. But I'm not going to have him matched up against Brock Bowers all day in coverage in the semifinal game. You know what I mean? That's just not a matchup. Now, look, maybe that can, you know, can Jaden Osbury run with Brock Bowers? Maybe, maybe not. But I know at least physically he'll have a better chance of holding up. And so, I mean, there's so much of this that goes into it. So I don't think it's a no-brainer every week you're going to do this. I think there's merit to having the ability to have a linebacker that can do some of the things that a nickel can do, so that there's not such a stark difference between what you do with your nickel and what you do with your rover, which is what Notre Dame's done the last few years. Very different stuff with rover compared to nickel. With Jaden Osbury, what the staff believes is his unique athleticism allows them to have a player that they can kind of be a bit of a hybrid. He can do rover stuff, but he can do more covered stuff than they've done with the nickel in recent seasons as well, or the rover in recent seasons as well. And I think there's a lot of value to that. And that's what Jaden Osbury is basically being tasked with doing. But I still feel, Ryan, in today's game, it's going to be, unless you just have a freak, a Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, a Isaiah Simmons, unless you have a guy like that, you're going to still be playing a lot of situational package football against most of the good teams that you play.
Well, I think you should have options available too, Ronnie, if I would just add something there. Like, I mean, just the fact of Jaden Osbury being in the rotation doesn't mean that he's the only part of the rotation, right? The rotation can also look a little bit different. Like, I mean, like there's a reality where the nickel, you know, 4-2-5 nickel is a nickelback, obviously, right? But also a safety body type, having an opportunity to do that, maybe to be a little bit more of a force alley player, or having a linebacker to be able to reduce down in certain situations too against a team that likes to spread you out, but then also run the football. You know what I mean? So I think that having options of different body types in a similar role is very interesting potential as well. D-Troll Hunter said, based on spring, who are your starting five? Mine is Charles Jagasaw, Rocco Spindler, Ashton Craig, Billy Shrouth, and Tosh Baker at the moment.
That would be mine for now. Yeah. But I think Emil Wagner did enough in the last two scrimmages we saw, the scrimmage and then the spring game, to say he's still in the mix of right tackle. I would say that Selvin Absher is going to be a guy that has done enough for me to say he at least deserves a chance to say, let's see how he grows between in the summer and how he looks in early fall camp. And right. He may be in there too. So I'm with you on those four. I mean, I just think there's a big difference between Rocco and Coogan. Just because, and Ryan, I think you nailed it earlier. There are a lot of times when Pat was a better player than Rocco last year, but that was more about Rocco than it was about Pat. Right. And if it, what Rocco gives you is he gives you a significantly higher ceiling. It's about whether or not he can be more consistent. And the emergence of Billy Shrouth as their clear number one guard now gives you a chance to kind of roll with that a little bit. And I think of a left side of Charles Jagasaw and Rocco Spindler. I don't know how much I love that in pass pro. Like, I almost kind of wish that I could maybe flip the guards and put Billy at left and Rocco at right. But I'll tell you one thing. I know I'm going to be able to run left. I'm going to be running inside zone. I'm going to be running my inside zone right call all game. And I'm going to be running the ball left, because inside zone right, just so people, most of you know this, but you're cutting back to the left. Like Notre Dame, I'm pretty sure I'm correct on this. Notre Dame in 2017 called inside zone to the right more than to the left, because you're cutting. If you're running it to the right, your hope is that you're actually cutting behind your left side. So you actually run it away from your strong side. And then they're going to be running their other stuff to the left, because that is a big. Like, if you're running duo, you better be running duo left with that group. There's no doubt about that, Ryan. Right tackle. In this situation, if Rocco can keep doing what he's doing, then I think four of the five positions should be solidified with pretty good football players. And now it's just about who steps up at right tackle.
Agree. And then I'll be anxious the rest of the offseason to see who's the right tackle, because that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Absolutely. Yep. Couple quick ones. Bobby S. says, any word on Greathouse or Payne injuries? Neither were significant. They were both fine after the game. They were both walking around fine after the game. It's just they're not going to put a guy that gets banged up at all back into a blue-gold game. And I know Jade's was at the end, but if you saw after the game, he's walking around fine. He was doing the alma mater thing. He was fine. And then here's one, Ryan, that that I think is very interesting. Bobby S says, how do they find roles and keep all of the linebackers in the room?
I mean, we just talked about it a little bit with the Jay Nosbury situation, right? Like him playing that nickel spot, like nickel backer, I guess, for the lack of a better terminology, right? I mean, there's different ways. I mean, you would even saw it last year with Maris Leufau. I mean, what did Maris do a lot on third down situations? They put him in as a situational pass rusher. I mean, I think that there's obvious roles that you can find. One is obviously figuring out the rotation of Mike and Will and making sure that there's reps available in those certain spots. But then it's finding situational roles like Jay Nosbury has. Jalen Snead on third downs, I imagine, is going to be used as a blitzer off the edge, sort of what I was talking about with Maris at times, which opens up another role potentially on the second level, potentially, for a team as well. So I think it's those situational roles, right? Like it's the pass rusher on obvious passing situations. It's the nickel backer position. It is, you know, Mike Will, and it's in 3-3 alignments. Maybe you do more of a traditional 3-3 stack where Jalen Snead might not be on the field as much because he's a little bit of a smaller guy. So maybe you want a little bit of a bigger stacked backer. So I think all those things together, you potentially have an opportunity to get the guys a lot of reps on the team.
Special teams is going to benefit from the linebacker depth at all. But here's the reality too, Ryan. We have to understand the fact that I'm not saying someone is going to transfer, but that's just part of life now. When you have rooms that deep, you're just going to have somebody at some point in time most likely leave. I hope not, but that's also something you have to – which is why you go out and get Teddy Rezac and Bodie Cahoon and Anthony Sacka the next year. That's why you got to keep recruiting every year because you just never know. You really just never know.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
All right, so we have another one from Brian Swint, who says, with the volatility in defensive line evaluations, how much are Al Golden and Coach Marcus Freeman involved, or how much should they be at the evaluation level?
I talked about this last week, Ryan. You want to take a swing at that one?
I mean, they should always be involved. I mean, Coach Freeman should be always know who's on the board, who are we evaluating, what are they going to look like, and who are we pushing for? And I think that's the same thing with Coach Golden, right? I mean, like, at the end of the day, if a defensive lineman is in Coach Washington's room, he should be the guy that is deciphering, that's a guy that I can work with personally. I can figure him out. We can hit the upside, right? But ultimately, he does have people that are above him that he has to answer to. So Al Golden and Marcus Freeman should both be signing off on these players. Like, yes, that makes sense. He fits schematically. It makes a ton of sense. So it's Coach Washington's pick, but things should always be signed off. There should be no decision that is made willy-nilly without people above you that sign off on those things.
I would like to see a little bit more maybe finagling him into what you want. I think that can be done too. Like, okay, here's why it's important for you to like this guy. I would like to see that as well. Because, hey, look, let's be honest. Some guys are really good coaches and good recruiters, but they're not good evaluators. Some guys are great evaluators, but not good recruiters. Some guys are great recruiters, but not good coaches. Some guys are good coaches, but not good recruiters. I mean, there's all and the good coaches understand, okay, this is his strengths. Let's make sure we're asking him to do that. But in this area over here, he needs to understand that we're going to have a little bit more of a say. And he's going to coach this guy up. This is your job, coach this guy up. And that's where we're going to be at. Here's one, Ryan, that I will ask because this is very specific for you. This is from Christopher Crosby. He says, draft question, Ryan, your Rams have a first round pick for a change. When was the last time they had a first round pick, Ryan?
It's been at least 3 years, yeah. 4 years, somewhere in that ballpark. Yeah.
Who are they taking? They're at 19 this year, right? 19. Who are they taking? And are they the most underrated scouting department in the league? They are always hitting mid and late round picks.
So I have a lot of former scouting friends in the industry, Christopher, and I have always been told, and I have agreed with this for a very long time.
Are they former friends or former scouts?
Former scouts.
Okay.
Former scouts. So friends that have been scouts in the National Football League who have told me, and I agree with it 100%, scouting departments are judged based upon day three selections and mid-round selections. That's the bulk of the roster. Like, we always freak out about the first round pick because that's the new shiny toy, right? But the teams are built off of mid round, late round, priority free agent players. Those are what teams are built off of. They are. So the Rams are very, 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 and maybe I'll throw in another very underrated team in the sense of what they have been able to fill in with gaps as far as positions of need over the last couple of years with mid and late round picks. It's been phenomenal. I mean, no short of it. Right? I mean, Puka Nacua was a fifth round pick. Kyren Williams was a fifth round pick. John Johnson was a fourth round pick. They have really done a tremendous job of finding value throughout the draft. They really have. And I mean, even their starting left tackle this past year and played well, Alaric Jackson, that went to Iowa. He was a priority free agent coming out of college. Like, he really was. So yes, they are a very good scouting staff. Less need and the Rams scouting department, though, they have decided that they would rather invest first-round picks for the most part in proven commodities. They spent some on Jalen Ramsey. They spent some on Matt Stafford. Like, that was like, they basically said that pick, no player that we're going to take at that pick is as good as Jalen Ramsey's going to be or Matt Stafford or any other position that we're talking about there. And I think it's sound logic. I really do. I mean, at some point it's, hey, man, that's probably too many first-round picks you're trading, but it worked ultimately. Like, if you're going to hate on it or you're not going to hate on it, they won a Super Bowl on it with it. So it worked. It absolutely worked for them.
You nailed it. Because what's the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is to win a Super Bowl. Yeah. They won a Super Bowl.
Yes.
I mean, that...
It won.
Yeah.
It won. The first-round pick this year, I'm thinking the Rams would probably go for a defensive lineman or an outside pass rusher. I mean, they just lost Aaron Donald, obviously, to retirement. So, Jerzon Newton from Illinois maybe could be a guy that might be in the conversation. Maybe they go outside pass rusher like Leatu Latu out of UCLA. That's kind of where my mind is. I mean, I guess corner – actually, no, they just signed – Tre'Davious White. So maybe if Tre'Davious White's healthy, they'll be okay. And they got Darius Williams back. So I think defensive line, bolstering the defensive line, losing Aaron Donald is a massive loss, man. That guy's one of the best defensive linemen to ever play football, right? So trying to find ways to supplement that production is probably a big thing for the Rams. So I would say defensive line, either interior or outside pass rusher, are probably the two spots I look at most.
Yeah. I saw a mock draft that had Latu going to the Broncos at 12. Is that too high for him?
If the injuries check out, I don't think so. No. He was at Washington. He had the neck issue, which had to cause him to retire early. Yeah. He had to retire. So if he's healthy though, he's the most pro ready pass rusher in the draft, as far as like nuance and understanding of how to rush and having a pass rush plan. I still like Jared Verse more, but like Latu's really good, man. He's a really good player. So I get it. Joe Par? Say Par. Hey, Joe. Gino Gadulli said each quarterback has gotten grades each practice and knows where they stand. Given this, if all is fair, is it really possible for Steve Angeli to stay as number two?
Well, actually, I think if they're going to do it this way, I think it's more likely that Steve Angeli stays at number two. I think if it's about grit,
because you're grading consistency, right?
I mean, exactly. Yeah. Grades in this aspect are usually about percentage of you did it your job. Like, that's just the reality. It's going to be, unless now there are some, like, I had a grading system, Ryan, when I would grade games as a coach, where it was basically a plus or a minus. But then if you did something really good, you know, that created a play of X number of yards, you got a double plus. So like if you were a guard and you just you know, like I think of the block that Alex Bars had against USC in 17, where he takes the D tackle who's in the B gap right with his right arm and throws him into the A gap. Josh Adams cuts right behind it for an 8-yard touchdown. That's a plus, plus, plus. Like, it's not just doing your job. You did your job at an elite level. If it would have resulted in a 25-yard gain, it'd give them a plus, plus. So you're also impacting. You're also not just saying, okay, did you do your job or not? But did you make plays? If there's a system that's not just a, you did your job on a 15 out of 20 plays, so your percentage is this. But if it's, hey, you did this, but you also got 9 extra points. You know, if you're a Harry Potter person, you know, you get some bonus points for certain things, right? Then that's how you have to do it if you're going to truly, in my opinion, do it the right way. But you could look, it's with anything. You can rig the system to get the answer you want.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just if we're talking about grades. So in this, if it's just purely off grades, you know, percentage of grades, then I could see Steve still being number two. If the grades are done in a way that factors in playmaking ability, then I just have a hard time seeing him stay number two. I mean, guys, we all saw it. Steve's a great kid, but everyone on the planet saw it. Everyone in the media that was actually at both games saw it. It's not close. Yeah. And one kid's in his first semester and the other kid's a junior. I mean, if it's that close now, and I don't even think it's close, it's a matter of time. If it's truly about giving the best player the opportunity to be in that role, it's not close, Ryan. It's not. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, it's not. The only guy that has a chance with the physical ability to hold CJ Carr's charge off, it's Kenny Minchie, not Steve Angeli. That's it, in my opinion. That's it. The only way that I can justify that one is it's pure seniority. That's all it is, pure seniority. Because I'll ask you this. Did you get the sense that Steve Angeli made consistently better reads beyond his number one read than CJ Carr did on Saturday? I didn't.
No. No.
Nope. Oh, man. It's going to be a fun conversation of quarterbacks the rest of the offseason,
is
it
not? Oh, yes.
Johnny S. Blue team scored 28. Gold team scored 21 for a total of 49. Thank you so much for doing the math. I really appreciate you, sir. Over under 5 games of 49 points during the season.
So let's set it at 4.5 because that's the better way, in my opinion, to do it. So last year, Ryan, they had 3. They had 3 games they scored 49 or more. It was against Tennessee State, Pitt, and Wake, or Stanford, excuse me. They had another game of 48 against USC, another game of 45 against Wake, and another game of 45 against NC State. They had 42 against Navy, 41 against Central Michigan, and then 40 against Oregon State. So you're talking about 5 or more would have to be 2 more than last year. If it was set at 4.5, would you take the over or would you take the under?
I would take the under. Just because I think the difference in this offense is going to be you're going to have a couple of those high-scoring games, but also I just hope, it's my wish, that the point totals just go up in the big games, right? So that we're still scoring a whole lot of points, hopefully in the 40s, but 5 games is a lot, man. That's a lot. That's a lot to score 7-plus touchdowns in a game 5 different times. That's a lot of points, man. So I'll say under. Say under.
So last year, LSU had the nation's number one scoring offense, and they scored more than 49 6 times. So only 1 more than that. And those times came, here's the thing. They scored 72 against Grambling, 49 against Ole Miss, 49 against Missouri, 62 against Army, 52 against Florida, 56 against Georgia State. So, like, 3 of the 5 were Grambling, Georgia State, and Army.
I'm pretty sure Jaden Daniels had, like, 8 touchdowns against Grambling or something like that. It was, ridiculous. Like, some weird number.
They were over 49, I believe, by halftime of that game. When I look at Notre Dame's schedule, I think it's possible to get to 5. I do. I look at Northern Illinois. I look at Miami of Ohio. I look at Navy. I look at Army. I look at Virginia. Maybe Georgia Tech, who had not a very good defense. I look at Stanford. So I certainly think there's opportunities to get to 49 5 times. But to just predict it is like, that's a lot. Like I said, a team that averaged 45.5 points per game this year did it 6 times. And half of those games were against Grambling, Georgia State, and Army.
Yep.
So I just don't know that I can go there. But I think it'll be close. I mean, I do. But Ryan, as far as winning championships, your point, here's the point. It's not so much about whether or not you score 45 points a game this year. It's what do you do in those five big games? And the reality is last year, Notre Dame, you know, did score a lot of points against NC State, you know, poured it on a little bit late. And they did score a lot against USC, which has to be considered one of the five biggest games last year. Because at that time, that was a huge game. You were coming off the loss to Louisville. They were an undefeated top 10 team. It was a big game, big moment. Looking back, yes, USC wasn't as good, but Notre Dame players still had to be ready for what they thought was going to be a battle. And then the other three big games, in my opinion, looking back at last season, were – so you had NC State and Clemson – or, I mean, USC – the other big game, the biggest games in my opinion last year, you have to look at Ohio State, you have to look at Louisville, Clemson, and then you could maybe add Duke in there, although I don't know that Duke is necessarily the same kind of big game as the others were. But if you want to throw that in there, that's fine too. That's the six quote-unquote big games. You scored 45 against NC State, but then 14 against Ohio State, 21 against Duke, 20 against Louisville, 48 against USC, 23 against Clemson. In two of those four games, your offense did enough to win your games. And the others, they didn't. Just simply didn't. And if your defense didn't play phenomenal during stretches of the Duke game, you probably lose that game too. I mean, just if they don't make that big third down stop at the end of the game, you don't get a chance to go on that last drive. So I'm going to go under, Ryan, but I'll just say this. Yep. I won't be shocked if they go over. I think they'll be at four, but I won't be shocked if they go over. Because they could get it – I mean – you know, because here's the thing, and here's part of it too, that why I'm going to go under, because Miami of Ohio is not a bum MAC team. It won 11 games last year. Northern Illinois is not a bum MAC team. They were a bowl team last year. You could score 45, 48 points and have a really good performance against them. I mean, you could. So, I mean, 49 is a lot of points, dude.
It's a lot of points.
Especially with the new clock rules. So, yeah we'll see. But I won't be shocked.
Bobby S. says, I watched the game and did come away more impressed with Emile Wagner than Tosh Baker. I thought he played pretty well. Baker is too slow out of his stance. What did you see?
That I mean, there's a lot I agree with here, Bobby. I think Emile did play better than Tosh consistently. I thought that he played pretty well. I'd say he played solid. I think Emile, he just kind of did his job. I didn't think Emile played really well. I just think he was solid, which is okay. Did I think Tosh was slow out of a stance at times? Yeah, it's an issue for Tosh. So, but the only caveat that I'll say is the context of who they were battling on a snap-to-snap basis also has to be factored into this as well.
Right.
And Tosh spent the majority of the game going against Boubacar Traore, RJ Oben, Bryce Young. I think that's a little different animal. You know what I mean? Than what Emile is going against, which Josh Burnham was the only – really impact. And Josh had some really big early wins against Emile, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that has to be factored in as well. But no, I mean, I think, like I said, I think Emile did enough in the game to say, I deserve for this to still be a battle in the fall. That's what I think he did. And now for Emile, it's about, okay, what do you do next? Can you build off this performance? He's got a really funky stance. Have you ever noticed, like, he looks very awkward in his stance, Emile does.
He's high-legged. High-legged. Yeah, I would agree. Bobby S. also has another one. Says, has Boubacar Traore passed up Junior Tuilamaka as next man in at Viper?
I don't think he has yet, no. Do I think he will? He should. Look, here's the thing, Ryan. Like, I talk to sources around the program, and they always rave about Junior, and I just have never seen it. He'll make a play here and there, but like he brings like almost nothing as a pass rusher.
Zero.
You know, he's a pretty solid run setter on the edge. I just don't see it. I don't blame Junior. I don't think that they made the move with him that they should have made with him. I just don't. And if you know, like,
he's just not an edge, man. Like, what do you want me to say? He's not an edge. He's a stack backer playing on the edge out of necessity for whatever reason. It's weird. Yeah. It's
a weird because he doesn't have that length and twitchiness that Josh Burnham has.
No.
Like, I had somebody tell me that they think Junior is more twitchy than Josh. And I'm like, okay. Someone that I respect, but I was like, yeah, I just don't see it. I mean, maybe he doesn't practice, but I don't see it. I just don't see it.
It's a shame too, because I could see Junior, and I hope this doesn't happen because I think he's an asset to your team because I think he does everything right. But couldn't you see Junior in like a year or two saying like, all right, I'm out of here. I'm going to go transfer somewhere else back to Mike and like be
lose
a good
15
player.
Pounds. And yes. I could see that. I worry that maybe the body transformation might have taken a step away. That's my fear. That's my concern. But and if you are going to move him to an end spot, why would you move Burnham to big end and Junior stays a Viper? That's the other thing, because I feel like at least Junior can set the edge. He's physical and he's a good-sized kid, but yeah, it is what it is. But I don't know that he has passed him yet. But look, based on the practices we saw, Bubakar has not passed up Junior yet. As far as when I say practices we saw, I mean the rotation that they used when they bring guys in. It would appear that Junior's still ahead of Bubakar. Not I saw them practice and I think Junior's still ahead. I'm talking about the rotation is what it is. It's not an evaluation of me of their performances. It's just an observation of, well, when they went to the number two team, that's the guy that they put in there. And when they went to three, that's the guy they put in there.
Right. I do think it's very – if Bubakar Traore isn't at least a pass rush specialist this year on obvious passing situations, then that is misuse of talent. Yes. He needs to be on the field in that department.
I don't think there's any doubt that he'll play. I mean, they played three Vipers last year. I mean, they played Burnham and Junior and Patojo. So I think he'll play. But to your point, Ryan, it's how do you use him and when do you use him? Yeah. And if your nickel team doesn't have Bubakar on it, especially, well, I'd say maybe dime for sure. Nickel, you know, let's see him continue to develop as an edge setter, those type of things, because you can still run on third and four. But if we're talking about like their dime package, and when I mean nickel dime, it's more about if you're in third and nine, you're more in a kind of a dime set versus pure pass rush. Mm-hmm. If you don't have Bubakar on the field, you are 100% correct. You're not using your personnel correctly, in my opinion.
Oh, man. Obvious third and long, Bubakar Traore, RJ Oben. You got Bryce Young inside, reduced down, and you got like Riley Mills or something at the other defensive tackle spot. Hello.
You're Jason Onye.
Jason needs spying someone. Like, all right, cool. Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. Now you got some long athletes, man. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Mike Reddy says, if you were a 2026 recruit and visiting Notre Dame three times in 2024, which weekends would you visit?
Okay, so there's a couple easy ones. Florida State on November 19th or November 9th. I'm there. I'm absolutely there. Louisville on September 28th. I'm absolutely there. And then the other one would be Northern Illinois, because the home opener is always fun. There's always a good crowd on the home opener. And
home opener is always awesome. Yep. It's always great.
Yep. Those would be my three. Okay. Maybe Stanford, because it's a rivalry, but I honestly just don't care about Stanford, Ryan.
What day is Stanford?
That is going to be in October. It is on October 12th. It's the first game in October, because they play Louisville on the 28th, and then they have a bye. And then they only actually have three October games this year because they're off that first weekend in October. So they play Stanford at home on the 12th. Then they play Georgia Tech at Mercedes-Benz, and then they play Navy at MetLife, which will – be a game that just giving you a heads up, you'll probably be at covering that one. So
I dig it.
We also need to talk about the Army game as well. We'll talk about
where's that. The Army game? That's up in New York.
Thank you. Yeah. So we'll chat about all those ones, but yeah. Okay. So we'll see. But those are the three that I would visit. Those are the three that I would visit. Yeah. Good question. Good question. Trying to think. No.
Well, if you're Jadon Blair, it could also be what three away games are you going to go to? Well,
you know, it's interesting, Ryan. Normally, they always have a game in either Virginia or Carolina, but this year they don't have a game in either. This year, it would be so. If you are talking about Jadon Blair, the one that would make the most sense would be the Georgia Tech game, and then maybe tracking up to New York or New Jersey for a road game. But they're in Texas. They play at Purdue. They play at USC, and then they play. In New Jersey and New York in their two other games. And so,
Do you remember last year, though? It was hilarious. Jadon Blair went to like three straight like Notre Dame away games or something like that.
Was it was awesome. Yeah. Cause I mean, if you think about like where they were playing last year, you know, he went to the Duke game, right? He was at the Duke game,
I think, too.
Yeah. He was at NC State and then he was at Clemson.
Yeah.
So I think the only one it was like three out of four. The only one he didn't go to, I think, was Louisville. Actually, did he go to Louisville?
He might have been at Louisville. I think he was at I don't think he was at one of those other ones. He said,
Louisville's one of his top five, aren't they?
Yeah, I think he was at Louisville for
that's hilarious. That's hilarious. Yeah, I could. It's a kid. Yeah, I like that kid.
I like the kid so.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Crosby, what does each quarterback have? Wait, what does each quarterback who played Saturday need to do this fall to put themselves in the best position to be the front runner to start in 2025?
All right, let's go seniority wise, Ryan, and just go each guy. Steve Angeli.
I mean, Steve Angeli just needs to be more consistent as far as processing, and he needs to just keep producing, right? Like every time he gets out there, he just needs to make plays, right? He needs to win. He just needs that's the results thing is what's going to keep Steve Angeli in that conversation, right? Is if he, every time he plays, he just keeps producing. He's producing. At the end of the day, you just got to be like, oh, okay, maybe he just produces. I don't know. Like, all right, cool.
Because Ryan, I mean, all the things we said about Steve and he doesn't have this, and then those things are all true. Yep. But what did he do the last two times he was on the field on Saturday? Offense went down and scored. I mean, at some point in time, that's the key. I mean, for me, the thing specifically about Steve is he's got to take advantage of being the veteran, meaning you can't have CJ Carr going through reads better than you're going through reads. You can't have Kenny Minchie being more willing to take some of those downfield chances or CJ Carr to take some of those downfield. You got to be the veteran, and the veteran's the one that can maybe make that extra read to bang that backside dig route. And that's CJ doing that right now, you know, and that's just where, you know, you can't have Kenny Minchie be the only one willing to take some of those outside shots that aren't wide open, like the one to Chris Mitchell was. And that's the thing is where Steve's got to play like a veteran. Like he has the poise of a veteran. He has the confidence of a veteran. He's got veteran weight room strength, but he doesn't process like a veteran. That's the thing for me. And that's where he's going to have to improve if he's going to really be the front runner. Because we're not talking about being the number two. We're talking about starting.
Right.
For Kenny, it's just about he's got to be more assertive. Yeah. And all the things he does. Kenny's got to be more assertive. That means going through progressions, how he conducts himself in the huddle, how he conducts himself on the sidelines, how he conducts himself on the practice field, in the weight room. Kenny's just got to – he's a very polite – he's a great kid. Like, he is. Yes. And if you've ever met his mom and dad – you get it. Like, okay, yeah, now I know why Kenny's the way that he is. Like, there's really good people, right? But Kenny's got all the talent in the world, Ryan. But he just needs to kind of be, I need you to just ramp it up a little bit, you know, be more decisive and know when to take those shots. There was a couple times on Saturday. I don't know if you could see this from the TV, but he had the post. And it's like, dude, if you're going to hold CJ Carr off, you've got to be willing to make that throw. Because here's the thing. Right. If you try to make those and you don't make them, then you're going to get beat out. If you don't try them at all, you're going to get beat out. So make them. Take them and make them because you've got the arm talent to do it. But he's shown the ability to bounce back from adversity. He's got tons of arm talent. And I was surprised at how much – like because in high school, Ryan, he would move around. He's a good athlete, but he always used his legs to buy time to throw.
It was like a last resort in high school.
Yeah. But he showed, hey, I can.
You can move a little bit, man.
Chains, you know, as a runner. So that was a positive. But he's just got to be more assertive in everything he does.
Yep.
And then with CJ, it's just keep doing what you're doing and put to work in the weight room.
Yeah, you know? Get stronger.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. That's the big thing. I mean, because look, he showed me in the two scrimmages we saw, he showed me a firmer grasp of progressing through the reads than any of the other quarterbacks on the roster that we saw. You know, just now, can he improve in that regard? It's general improvement from spring to summer and then into the fall from a mental technical standpoint, but it's just for him, it's just going to be about get bigger and stronger. Just keep putting the work in the weight room so you can hold up. And that's it. Cause like, could you imagine when CJ's got 2 years in the weight room under his belt, what he's going to look like throwing the football?
Yeah.
You know, same with Kenny. You know, now, and he's now going into that year too. So it's going to be fun to see. But that's where I'm at, Ryan. We're on the same page.
Yep.
We're on the same page with those.
Agreed.
This is one that Jason Smith has asked us a couple times, Ryan, and I got to give it to him. So let's do this one.
Jason Smith, make a starting offense with Notre Dame defensive players and a defense with the Notre Dame offensive players. Okay.
All right. So offensively, I'm going to go Jack Kaiser quarterback. I know that Josh Burnham played there too, but Josh is a little bit bigger. And so I'm going to put Jack there at running back. You tell me, I'm going to do these. And if you have somebody else, Ryan, you let me know somebody else that you want to put there.
Okay.
Running back, I'm going Micah Bell. He's going to be my
Drake Bell.
I was going to say that. Drake's my power back. He's my number two back.
Oh, you can't have two. You just need to do one.
I can. He said, starting. Okay. I'm going Micah Bell because I want to run read zone and have my speed guy. Okay. You're going Drake Bowen.
That's
a pretty good pick. Drake had, 1,700 yards this last year.
That's pretty good.
My wide receivers. Well, okay, you know what, Ryan? I'm going to go with yours because of what I'm about to say. I'm going to go with yours, Drake Bowen at running back, because Micah Bell is my slot receiver.
Okay.
I'm going to have Micah Bell in the slot. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have Xavier Watts as my Z.
Okay.
And my X receiver is going to be – You know what? I might actually have to put Xavier at X at this point and put maybe Christian Gray at Z.
Christian Gray would be one of my starting receivers,
And then put Xavier – because I think he'd fit in the boundary as a receiver better than – because he's stronger than Christian.
Am I allowed to include all the 2024 players into this conversation?
Anyone that's going to be on the roster in 2024, yes. Even
Bronte Johnson's my ex. Bronte Johnson's
okay. Oh, that's a good one. So then I'm going to put Xavier Watts at Z because Xavier was a really freaking good wide receiver coming to high school. So then would you put Christian in the slot, or are you going to leave Micah Bell there?
I might actually put Xavier in the slot and put Christian out with the Z. That might be more of a thing. I feel like Xavier can do some stuff after the catch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A little slide action.
My tight end's pretty easy. I'd have Preston Zinner would be my tight end. That's him or Josh Burnham would be my tight end.
The other one I was thinking of is Bryce Young played a little tight end his last year. And that's a mammoth of tight ends.
I'd probably
go with Preston Zinner.
Offensive line's going to be a little bit tougher. Let's see here. I'm going to have – boy, that's – man. Well, Sean Sevillano, I feel like he's got to be a guard for me, right?
Guard,
Not
flexible enough to play center.
No, I'd probably – you know what I have? I'd probably teach Donovan Heinisch how to snap. He'd be a pretty athletic little center, I think, you know. Let's see here. I feel like I'd have to have Riley Mills at offensive tackle. Right.
He could probably do it.
Yeah. Probably put him at offensive tackle.
Howard Cross at center, maybe. Howard Cross.
Maybe. Howard Cross probably do anything he wants to do. Put Jason Onye at my left guard. He'd be a pretty athletic. Like put Onye and Mills at left guard, left tackle. It's pretty athletic backside.
I'm not too thrilled about this offensive line, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I'm not. Who'd be my right tackle?
Didn't Devin Houston play some offense?
Yeah, Devin Houston. Yeah, popped him at the same time as yours. Yeah, Devin Houston. That'd be my other one.
Gabriel Rubio at guard. He'd be one of the guards if he's available this fall.
So, maybe. Yeah. He'd be my rotation. So that's the defense. Offense. Let's go with the defense, Ryan. I know one for sure that Ryan's going to do, and we'll just start off with that one. Let's go big end. It's Cooper Flanagan is going to be starting defensive ends. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, Flanagan be one. Yeah. Who would the other defensive end be?
Jack Larson, I guess. He was a pretty good high school tight end. Maybe Eli Raritan could maybe do that. He was a pretty good – he's a pretty good, pretty athletic kid. But, yeah, Jack actually played defensive end in high school. So have Jack be your Viper. Defensive line inside.
Jagasaw
and Rocco probably be my. I'm two gapping all day long.
You know who else was a good defensive lineman in high school? Was Otting. Otting was a good defensive lineman. He was a really good defensive lineman.
I'm going to be two gapping all day, brother. I'm going with Charles and Rocco up the middle.
Okay. Yep. Well, that's good because I don't know if you have any linebackers ready. So I don't know.
Linebacker. You know, maybe I might have to put Eli Raritan at the defensive end so I could put Jack Larson at Mike. I think that might make the most sense. I'm definitely going 4-2-5. That's for darn sure. Because I don't know that I could come up with three linebackers.
Kedren could play inside linebacker, I'm sure.
Will. Yeah. He's 225. Yeah. You know, play Will.
Sure.
My corners. Well,
Jeremiah Love told me that he could be a lockdown corner if he wanted to.
So let's put Jeremiah in the boundary. Yeah. I'm trying to think of some other receivers that played defense in high school. Is it Micah Gilbert? Obviously played some played safety this past year. Pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't want Great House playing defense. I don't want Chris Mitchell. I mean, his brother's a pretty darn good cornerback. So maybe John, could give Chris some pointers, and you could put Chris Mitchell at your field corner spot. Yeah. Nickel. Let's see. I mean, I got to think Jordan Faison could play or be a really nice nickel, don't you think?
Probably.
Yeah. Him or KK Smith, maybe Logan Saldate. I'd have some options at nickel, Ryan. I feel like I'd have some options at nickel.
Dang, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard.
Safety, I'm going to go Micah Gilbert is going to be one of my safeties. And you know, boy, Aeneas Williams might be an interesting nickel option as well, Ryan, with that little stout he's got going on.
Yeah. Oh, you know who was a decent safety in high school? Actually, pretty good safety. Aeneas Williams was a good safety.
Okay,
good safety.
Let's go with Aeneas. Yeah. We can put him there. So let's just put it this way. If we had to come up with those teams, here's one thing that Ryan and I can guarantee. Notre Dame's not winning a lot of games next year with that lineup.
Oh, someone said Cam Williams on in the secondary.
Gilbert and Williams at safety. That'd be pretty interesting.
Or even Cam at corner, man. He's athletic enough to play corner too if he wanted to, right? Like,
They're not winning a lot of games that way, man. Winning a lot of games that way. Hey, and Andrew Gilmore, you're cheating. You said Devin Ford is a corner. He's a defensive player. Hey, that might be my running back, though, Ryan. Devin Ford might be my running back. I forgot about that one.
That's kind of cheating, though.
That's a little bit of cheating. It's kind of cheating both ways. It is a little bit. Let's be honest about it. Okay, Ryan, this is one from Iden Benami. Ryan Roberts, are the Chicago Bears smart enough to draft Joe Alt to protect Caleb Williams?
Are they smart? I mean, would the Chicago Bears draft Joe Alt if he was there at number 9? Maybe, but I think the problem is that Joe Alt's not going to be there at 9, Iden. So I think that the Bears are going to draft best pass catcher available or trade down from 9. I think it's the two options that are on the board. So they'll draft Roma Dunze at 9, or they will trade back if Roma Dunze gets picked before 9.
So let me ask you this. So let me ask you this scenario, Ryan. Number one, do you think it would be smart for the Bears to trade up to get Joe Alt? I don't. I said the other day, it depends on how far Joe slides. Am I doing it at 5 or 6? I don't know. Would I do it at 7? Mm-hmm. Yes. I would think about that depending on what I have to give up, those two spots. But
I don't think Tennessee's going to trade with you, though, is the thing. They'll take a tackle at 7. I don't think they'll let you trade up. Yeah.
So what you're thinking is, if I was going to trade up and get them out of that slot,
you have to get the 6 at least. You have to at least get up the 6.
Or if I was going to trade with the Titans, I'd have to overpay. Is that like in order to get them to go down?
Yeah. I mean, they're probably kind of desperate for offensive tackles. You know, they're starting offensive tackles right now in 2024. The Titans would be Nicholas Petit-Frere and Dylan Radins would be their starting tackles. So they need two of them, man. They might double dip this draft. So I don't know.
We're trying to actually trade back up to 9 to get Fashano, actually. So if the three top receivers are gone, you think they would trade down instead of just taking the next best tackle?
Yeah, because I honestly I'm not 100% positive that they're even looking for a tackle early in the draft.
Do you think they go Dallas Turner there if the receivers are gone?
No, because I think they just spent a lot to get Montez Sweat this past year as well, right? Like I think wide receiver is the easiest one. I think the problem is that if the top three receivers are off the board, I like Brian Thomas Jr. a lot, but 9's probably a little high for Brian Thomas Jr. I like him a lot though, so. I'd rather trade into like the mid-teens and try to get someone like a Brian Thomas Jr. I would feel a lot better about that valuation because they need a guy that's an outside vertical oriented dude, because they have DJ Moore's kind of an inside out, but he's more like a yak type of dude. They have Keenan Allen, who's like a slot separator type of guy, but they don't have a lot of speed on the outside. So I think that could be a guy that they could target, is someone outside oriented that could take the top off a little bit.
Okay. I got a question for you, Ryan. What's the one I think we might have been asked this already, but if not, like in the past, what is there any team that's not being discussed as a potential top 10 trade-in team that you could see trying to get into the top 10. I mean, obviously the Vikings, everyone's talking about the Vikings. A lot of people talk about the Raiders, the Broncos. Yeah. Is there anyone that you could say, hey, I could see this team trying to sneak into the bottom of the top 10?
I mean, those are the three most likely ones. I'm trying to think. So 14 is New Orleans. 15 is – who's 15? Oh, man. Oh, 15 is the their tight end team. People keep mocking tight ends to them. Why is my mind – my mind's drawing a blank right now for some reason.
With the Saints?
Who's 15? 15? No, Saints are 14. 15 would be the –
been doing this mock draft for a bunch of times.
I know who 15 is. I know who 15 is. I just can't think for some reasons. It's the Colts. Then Seattle at 16. Then 17. I don't know, man.
Jaguars.
I don't know
if anybody. Jaguars.
Yeah. Cool. Jaguars could be a trade up team, but I don't know if Jaguars are going to trade up into the top 10. Like, they could be a team that trades up to like 12 or something.
I've seen them mocked with trading for the Broncos to get a corner a lot. I see a lot of people.
Corner or wide receiver. Yeah. I can see that.
Every mock draft that I've seen where they do that trade, they take the kid from Toledo, the corner from Toledo.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's what they would do. I'm just saying, like, that's all the mocks that I've seen have had that.
I like Quinn Mitchell a lot.
Yep. That would be interesting. Your guy, Jordan, your guy, Jordan Reed, and I like Jordan a lot too. He actually had the Eagles trading up to 12 with the Broncos to take Terrion Arnold. So I thought that was interesting.
That's just not a Howie Roseman deal, man. Come on, Jordan. That's just not a Howie Roseman thing. If he's trading up for a defensive tackle, I think. Or an offensive lineman, I mean. You know, the Eagles have only drafted one first round corner in the last 25 years.
Really? Who was it?
One. Lito Shepherd.
Wow.
Yeah. And even Lito was only like 20 something. Pick out of Florida. So, and they also haven't drafted a linebacker in the first round since 1979.
Wow.
That's a fact. Jerry Robinson.
I've seen some weird ones, like the certain teams like haven't drafted a Notre Dame guy in a long time. Like the Titans have not drafted a Notre Dame player since Rocky Boyman.
Well, that can change.
Not in the first round. I mean, period.
That's wild.
So it's really strange. Really strange. Yeah.